WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Welcome to WrestleSpective Radio. I am Jason Mann, and with me today is Don Owens from the Future Endeavors Podcast. Don, how you doing?
What's up, Jason? Good to be back.
Thanks for being back. So we're going to talk about the Extreme Rules pay-per-view. We always have you here every month to go through the WWE pay-per-view. But before that, we'll get to that. But right now, I think, you know, really the thing that is on everyone's mind right now, and this is going to be a spoiler for people, so if you've somehow managed to be a wrestling fan and avoid this spoiler, just go ahead and listen to us after SmackDown is done. But for the rest of you, I think the important thing is that Christian and Alberto Del Rio had a heck of a ladder match at Extreme Rules, and pretty powerful, dramatic moment for Christian in his career. Finally won the, you know, a major world title. You can argue about his other world titles, but clearly his biggest moment of his career. Edge by his side, embracing, hugging, everything. You know, huge reaction to that. Great moments. And then 2 days later on the SmackDown taping, he lost the title to Randy Orton. And this may have upset a few people.
Yeah, just a few.
Yeah. So, what's your take? First of all, what's your take on the match at the show?
The match on the show, in my opinion, was the highlight of the pay-per-view for multiple reasons. I mean, it was a hell of a ladder match. It was, everything just worked. And you know, I know a lot of people were pulling for Del Rio, and I think Del Rio's time will still come. But obviously, this was Christian's time. I mean, it was set up, you know, so well, you know, with the fact that Edge had to retire and the belt was vacant. And I mean, who better to get the title at this point than Edge's best friend, his, you know, former on-screen brother, you know, Christian, who has busted his ass for, you know, just as long as Edge has, you know, 13 years in the WWE, you know, just really, you know, deserved this moment so much. And, you know, I was worried, you know, I was really worried throughout the match because, obviously, if you've been a fan of Christian's his entire WWE run, he seems to constantly get screwed when it comes to, you know, becoming a world champion. You know, you always read about how Vince doesn't view him in the back as, you know, a main eventer or locker room leader or somebody that can carry a brand. And it's just really, really sad. So, you know, even though all signs pointed to him winning the championship, I still was on the edge of my seat that whole entire match, you know, and I thought he had it when Brodus Clay came out, and then Brodus took him down, and, you know, and then Del Rio was starting to grab it, and I thought Del Rio was going to get it, you know, and then Edge came out and distracted him, and then, of course, the big moment, Christian grabbing down the belt and becoming the new World Heavyweight Champion. I was thrilled, you know, the whole, you know, I watched it at a restaurant, and the restaurant busted into applause, and, I mean, it was just a very, very cool moment. You know, I talked about on Future Endeavors, you know, when he won the belt and Edge and him were celebrating and hugging in the ring, I mean, it really brought me back to, like, the moment of, you know, Benoit and Guerrero celebrating at the end of WrestleMania 20. You know, I mean, it was just one of those moments that is just so cool. Yeah, it makes you feel so happy to see, and it's something that, you know, I'll always remember. And, you know, I truly felt that match should have been the last match of the night. The pay-per-view should have ended that way. I don't think there's any better way to end a pay-per-view than with what we saw there, you know, of Christian finally reaching after all this time, the highlight of his career, Edge being there to celebrate with his best friend. It just came together so great, and I was so happy at the end of Extreme Rules, and was looking forward to a great championship reign from Christian. I expected it to go at least till SummerSlam. You know, I thought he'd get a good summer run with it, and then we were spoiled on Tuesday with the bad news that we got.
Yeah, well, I think you were probably a little optimistic with the SummerSlam idea, but I don't think anyone expected it to happen in one day, or 2 days, or whatever, 5 days, however you want to put it. So that was a surprise. I like the match. With Edge's injuries and just sort of how many guys have had their career shortened or been hurt in ladder matches, I'm kind of getting to the point where I don't need to see ladder matches too much anymore. I'm not saying never, but I do think that, really like once a year, once every couple years is kind of optimum for a high stakes ladder match like this. And I grant you they're, almost always great matches and almost always really exciting to watch. And this was no exception, but, I don't know, just some of the bumps that they had to take, like, Alberto landing, on the, back first in the prone ladder, and just, kind of a few of the crazy ones. I mean, Brodus, getting busted in his head really bad and things like that. It gets to me more now that, hey, Edge is, having to retire when he's fairly young because, of doing this stuff. And I'm, sure there's other reasons too. And, obviously wrestling is a, endeavor that, it's dangerous. Even if you do it relatively safe, you can get hurt and, and the wear and tear is going to get to anyone. But I'm just kind of at the point where, ladder matches aren't really doing it for me like they used to. Not, they're still exciting, but I don't think they're really worth the risks that, some of these guys have to take. The other thing is, first, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that before I address my other point.
I agree with you. That's a tricky, subject right there, the whole ladder match thing. Obviously, ladder matches have cut a lot of people's careers, shorter than they should be. It's a tricky thing for me because for me personally, ladder matches are my favorite thing to watch. So it's, it's like for their safety and for their longevity of their careers, yeah, I don't think they should be done so often. But from a fan standpoint, I love ladder matches. And, so every time one comes up, it's always good to see. I mean, with the theme pay-per-views right now, we don't see them all too often. I mean, you get the Money in the Bank. You usually get one in Extreme Rules, and you get one, obviously, at TLC. Three times a year, somebody might seem a little bit of overkill. Especially because there's two on Money in the Bank. But, you're going to have different people doing those. It is the first time we've seen Del Rio in one. And
He was in the TLC match at TLC, right? Wasn't it Del Rio, Ray, Kane, and Edge?
Well, yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Boom!
I already forgot about that. Yeah, good
there
job.
You go. See, it was a ladder match.
That was a TLC match.
Yeah, well,
straight up ladder match.
I see that because there's a difference between a TLC match and a ladder match.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. Like I said, from a fan standpoint, I love them. They stand out and they're always very, very exciting matches to me. So, it's a double-edged sword on that one. I felt that this match, the setup of it being a ladder match was perfect just due to the fact that the belt was vacant. So, I think that, like, in a situation like that, that's the best, option for a match to, have the vacant belt just hanging and first one to grab it, is the new champ. So, I think it worked for that kind of aspect of the angle.
Yeah, I get that. And certainly I think winning it in a ladder match made it an even more memorable moment. But, like I said, how much is too much? How often is too often? I get your points, and they're fun, and wrestlers are willing to do them. I get, there's definitely a lot of issues there, but The other thing is, of course, you know, with the loss to Randy Orton, you know, I don't particularly care for Randy Orton as wrestler. I mean, he's just there, he's fine, but I certainly don't you know love him as a performer. And you know, I was hoping that Christian would get a nice run with the title, but you know, I found myself surprised at the and a little I don't know if befuddled is the right word, but like I agree with the sentiment that's like, wow, you know, maybe, you know, they should have given Christian an opportunity to kind of see what he could do as champion. And that would have been a nice thing to see. And, you know, obviously Christian's one of the best wrestlers in WWE. So you were pretty much guaranteed great matches. You know, he's a good interview. So you were guaranteed, you know, good promos. If he's wrestling, you know, pretty decent guys, you know, you're going to get enjoyable feuds if, you know, the creative is there at all. So, you know, it could have been an enjoyable run. I don't think it would have been like something that would have really dramatically changed their business or anything. But, you know, I don't, you know, whoever the champion is, I don't see that being a huge thing. But I was, again, you know, for me, it's just like that belt changes so often that it's hard for me to really get too invested in when it, you know, it changes again. I mean, it used to be obviously, and you know, we've gone over this before, I'm sure, but, you know, the belts used to be a lot more special because, you know, they were treated, you know, with importance, and they were, you know, changed rarely, and they were, you know, not necessarily the focus of the shows, but even the focus of the show has always been the wrestlers or you know, the feuds and stuff. I mean, but the title, it's very much something that elevates the context, for lack of a better term, and just the way the belts have bounce around all the time, and you know, and guy, you know, and you know, Orton being a 9-time champion or whatever, and Cena being a 10-time champion and all that. It's just like, you know, you see the same stories recycled over and over again. It's hard to get excited for them, but I do think that if you want to rebuild the belts, kind of the best thing to do is to put them on your top guys, and the top guys right now are Cena and Orton. Because I think, law, if you put the title on the guy that you're going to, that WWE is going to focus on, and WWE has pretty much proven that it's going to focus on Cena and Orton, you know, no matter what, that is probably the best, and letting them keep them and defend them. And I think that's the best way to create more value in those titles, rebuild them somewhat, and then you can start, they can be more effective storytelling tools when it gets to a certain point when those titles get more over. And you start having, you know, then you start building up other challengers or be able to kind of like, you know, do more things with them and let them kind of be what they were meant to be and let them be more effective, if that makes sense.
I'm just over the same people having the championships all the time.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I understand that logic of being like, you know, like, I mean, you're looking at it from just the logic of, okay, I'm used to it. The belts don't really mean nothing right now, so it's whatever. But, you know, I mean, the belts do mean a lot of people to a lot of people still. I mean, you could see that last night with the outpouring of affection that people truly had for the fact that Christian lost the title and was robbed of this already, you know? I don't think I've seen as much of a uproaring as I did last night on Twitter, you know, and I share in those sentiments. I mean, I've been a big Christian fan for a long, long time. I mean, you know, ever since his debut. I mean, you know, I mean, Christian won the WWE Light Heavyweight Championship in his very first match, you know, and you know, he's part of the Brood, and I was into it, man. I was into him and Edge and Gangrel, the whole nine, you know, and it was great to see, you know, him get a success right off the bat. Of course, him and Edge, probably one of the greatest tag teams of all time, you know, and then, you know, look what they did there. And then they went solo and they both won, you know, individual titles, and they, you know, became Intercontinental champions, and Christian became European champion, and he won tag teams with a couple other guys. And, you know, it's like Edge then skyrockets to the top. You know, Christian kind of gets held back. He leaves the WWE, goes to TNA. TNA, at least at that point in time, knew what they were doing, and they utilized him properly. He became the heavyweight, you know, the NWA heavyweight champion in TNA. Finally got the big one, you know. But, of course, we all wanted him back in WWE. We all wanted, you know, WWE to give him a proper, you know, a fair shake. And WWE just basically screwed him from the second that he returned back to the company. I mean, you know, when he signed to come back, we didn't see any promos, you know, nothing was saying Christian's coming back, nothing hyped him, nothing. And then all of a sudden, he just popped up one night on what? ECW, on the show that nobody was watching, you know, and then all of a sudden, after being gone for 3 years, Christian's back, and no one even knew. Because he was thrown to ECW, you know. But you know what? He took that. He ran with it. He became the ECW champion a couple times, and he had some awesome matches on that brand. And he truly, truly carried it, you know, for what it was worth. I mean, even though, you know, obviously the WWE ECW wasn't worth very much, he still, you know, he ran with it, and he did his best, you know. And then it's like ECW shut down, and he went to SmackDown, and I just, you know, I assumed, okay, this is his opportunity, this is his chance, and he just never, ever got that damn chance, you know? So it's like, he's just that guy you've constantly been pulling for. I mean, he's one of the best workers they got right now, and he's got the crowd support, he's got mic skills. I mean, I just don't understand what's lacking here that Vince or anybody else in charge cannot seem to get behind him. You know, and it's like, yes, you know, it was, you know, more or less a sympathy thing to give him the title because Edge had to retire. Of course, Edge was supposed to be in this match originally with Del Rio. He had to retire. The belt became vacant. Christian got that spot, and Christian got an opportunity that he probably never would have gotten before. But you know what? He got it. He became world champion. It was a great moment. I mean, the Twitter feed was insane that night of just the outcrying of support for Christian, and it was awesome. I mean, we're just so, so proud. And then SmackDown spoilers come out, and all of a sudden it's just like, I'm just flabbergasted. I mean, it was true. It was pure pissed offness that happened last night. I love the WWE. I truly, truly do. And I've tried to always look, I mean, you know me, Jason, we've talked a million times. I always try to look for the positive in an angle or in a decision that they go for. But I just don't see it right now. I understand that when they did the draft and Randy Orton went to SmackDown, of course the focus was to be Randy Orton. That's going to be Orton's show. Cena's got Raw. Randy Orton's got SmackDown. All right. But you know what? Orton's not going anywhere. And Orton's had the belt like 9-10 times already as well. There is no reason to hotshot the belt over. You know, I had said on Twitter, I understand that WWE does shit like this from time to time. And if this was Christian's third or fourth reign as the world champion, I wouldn't care. I'd be like, oh, okay, you know, yeah, that's fucked up. But you know what? It's WWE and it's what they do sometimes. It wouldn't have been that big of a deal. The fact of the matter that they did this to him 2 days after he won the championship on his very first title reign. I mean, they couldn't even allow him to at least get to the pay-per-view. I mean, I know that 3 weeks isn't that big of a deal, but come on. I just don't see the point of why not at least giving him one or two defenses on SmackDown to at least make him look like, okay, cool. He had a, you know, very short reign, but look what he did with the belt. And then give it to Orton at Over the Limit. There's two pay-per-views this month. I'm just so pissed that they couldn't have at least given him to the pay-per-view. Because, I mean, I know you don't think that, you know, 3 weeks is that big of a deal compared to doing it now or doing it then. But I feel it does. Because, I mean, I just think this is just a complete slap in his face. I mean, you know, if I was Christian, I mean, I would be so heartbroken right now to finally achieve the biggest goal I could possibly get just to have it ripped away from me. I'm surprised they even put his name on the belt. You know, when he was talking to The Rock on Monday, I saw his name on the title and I said, oh, okay, that's cool. They put a nameplate on it. I'm surprised they even took the time to make that. You know, I mean, I just don't get it. Why not give him an opportunity? You know, let's test it. Let's see. You know, he would have been a great world champion, and now we'll never know because they pulled the plug so fast and basically used Christian to be a transitional champion to make sure that the title stayed on SmackDown because Del Rio was drafted to Raw, and obviously he couldn't win the world title and take it to Raw. So they said, all right, here, we'll have a feel-good moment. We'll give the belt to Christian. This belt stays on SmackDown, and we'll have him have a match with Orton, you know, immediately right off the bat and pass the belt. And I'm so saddened by this decision. I think it's stupid. I hope that the WWE sees how many people are supporting Christian. You know, I know that your Fair to Flair buddy Kick Out is doing a SmackDown blackout right now, and you know, I think that's really cool of him that he's actually protesting it to that avail that he's not even going to watch SmackDown until Randy Orton loses the title. You know, I'm still too big of a fan to you know, do a blackout. But you know, I you know, appreciate things like that people are this furious over it. I mean, I've seen, you know, different companies talk about starting their own wrestling promotion now because of this, because they're sick of WWE screwing up, you know, angles and stuff. I mean, this has caused a big chain reaction here, more than I think WWE realized. And, you know, they pissed off a lot of their fans. They talk about the WWE universe and how, you know, they want everybody to be a family and just, you know, it's all, you know, they need to start listening to the WWE universe and see what they want and start, you know, moving towards that, because they messed up extremely last night. And, you know, I hope that they realize what they've done, and I hope that they remedy this somehow down the line.
Well, that'll be interesting to see whether, you know, obviously the feedback that we see on Twitter and other places, I mean, you know, you're talking about the hardcore or the hardcores. I mean, you're not exactly, you know, that's a different fan than, you know, just kind of casually watches WWE. And it'll be interesting to see whether that, you know, that fan really is angry about it, or what, you know, how those numbers end up shaking out. It'll be interesting to see whether it has any effect. I mean, it might. You know, the passion for this is pretty, is higher, you know, it's higher than I would have expected. And it certainly, you know, that could mean like a, you know, a larger, you know, backlash down the road. You know, this kind of reminds me of when Eddie Guerrero in 2003, when he and Tajiri were a team, and he turned heel on Tajiri, and the fans refused to boo him and just, you know, kept on cheering him and kept on. It was kind of like, you know, they were offering a signal like, hey, we don't want this. We don't want, you know, Eddie to turn heel and to be, you know, another mid-card feud. It's time to, you know, push him up and have him be a top guy, and we're behind him. And they listened, you know, eventually, and they listened, and, you know, he got that run. He got to beat Brock and have that run in 2004, and, you know, which was a lot of fun. So, you know, I could see that kind of being a parallel where people, you know, I mean, it's not a heel turn involved, so it's a little different, but where people, you know, through the loss, get behind Christian even more and force it to the point where he, you know, where they, you know, they have to start listening. You know, that's definitely a possibility. But, you know, I'm not going to condemn this yet until I see where it goes. You know, maybe there's something, maybe they have something really interesting in mind for Christian. You know, maybe it leads to like a really great heel run for him. Maybe Orton's turning. You know, there's a lot of directions it could go. I don't see, like, you know, it certainly seems like a bad idea on the surface, and I don't have a lot of faith in it being, like, turning out to be for the best or anything like that, but, you know, I'm willing to be a little open-minded about it, and, you know, and not, you know, it doesn't, you know, it's not affecting, you know, I'm not angry about it, and you know, I'm not saying that I'm better or that, like, you know, I kind of have a bit of a detached view of wrestling. I'm more into just enjoying the performances and some of the, you know, and some of the stories, and not really getting into, you know, caring a whole lot about who wins and loses. You know, slightly disappointed that they would you know, pull it from Orton so quickly, or excuse me, from Christian so quickly, but you know, again, you know, we'll see where it goes, and certainly, you know, I you know, like I said, maybe ends up being better for Christian in the end. I mean, you know, if it galvanizes that kind of support, that would be a really good deal for him. But obviously, we'll have to see.
That's all I can hope for at this point, is that somebody realizes how much support he has to be a main star, because unfortunately, at this point, you know, moving forward, I think unless somebody says something to Vince and they realize how big of a deal Christian really is, I think Christian's going to get left out of the mix. I think that they're just going to move on. I think Randy Orton's going to get into a feud with Mark Henry, and they're just going to move on. And Christian's going to be just kind of in the background once again and just screwed over. So, you know, all I can hope for at this point is that they realize what they did, they see the uproar, and they do something about it. And, you know, like you said, I mean, if it does result in making Christian, you know, turn heel and get his revenge and hopefully another title reign, then cool. All I know is at this point, Vince and anybody in any type of power in WWE doesn't view Christian as a main event player or somebody that can carry a brand. And they just, you know, they gave him the belt to be like, look, consider it like a lifetime achievement award. You know, here's a prize for all the hard work you've done for us. Now it's in the record books. You can say you were a world champion, and that's that. That is, it's not never intended to, you know, get a full chance to, you know, make a run for it. So, you know, so unless they see something, I just have a bad feeling he's going to be left in the dust, and Orton's just going to move on to other feuds. So I really hope they see something and they put Christian back into the mix. I hope Christian gets another, you know, match for it at Over the Limit. I just hope he doesn't get left out. You know, from what I hear, the match is awesome on Friday, and I do look forward to seeing it. I actually watched, there's a YouTube video already out that I put on the Future Endeavors Facebook page that's actually the ending of the match, like the last 2 minutes of the match, and it is really, really good, and the ending's very spectacular when Orton wins. But, you know, so I just don't get, like, once again, why they would want to just give that away on free TV and not have just, you know, saved that for the pay-per-view, because obviously Christian versus Orton would have been a big selling point for the next pay-per-view.
Well, let's talk about the some of the other big events from the from Extreme Rules. Obviously the main events, John Cena winning the WWE title against Miz and John Morrison, ending Miz's, I think, 159-day reign, which Booker T told me must be a record. So obviously that's that must be a record if Booker T would say it, because he would not lie to me. And it might be, you know, for all I know, it, you know, it's the way titles go, it certainly could be a record, and at least in the last couple of years. But I know it's at least one of the few long ones. But anyway,
I think the record that he's making is it for being his first title reign.
Okay.
You know, like I think that there's a lot of longer ones, but for somebody in their first one, I think he's got the longest since like Cena and like.
Right, Cena and Batista, yeah, their 05 reigns were both like 281 days.
Yeah.
I'm sad that I know that. So this was a pretty good match. I thought they used Morrison, you know, again, kind of used his athleticism pretty well. I enjoyed, everyone looked pretty good in it. There was a pretty, very dangerous thing where Cena and Morrison superplexed Miz from the top of the cage down to the floor, almost kind of broke his neck. But beyond that, you know, it was pretty well done. It wasn't spectacular, but it was a pretty good steel cage match overall. And you know, it was well designed. I thought, you know, how R-Truth, you know, came in and prevented Morrison from winning, and then kind of his, you know, casually climbing out of the cage as if he would have won the match if he would have been involved. I thought that was a neat thing. I think R-Truth really, over the past couple of weeks since that heel turn, has really been on fire in his promos, and you know, just kind of showing some really cool facial expressions and intensity, and really turning that character around a whole lot. And I'm, you know, interested in seeing what he can do with it, because, you know, he's definitely shown some potential as a heel character, you know, before. You know, whether in the ring he'll deliver is another issue, but, you know, as far as the character goes, I think it's really clicking. So, what'd you think of the match?
I like the match. I like the match a lot. You know, for what I liked about a triple threat steel cage is the fact of, you know, in a normal triple threat, you always have where, you know, one person gets hit and they roll out to the outside of the ring and then they disappear for 5 minutes and then the other two fight and then one of them gets knocked out and the other guy comes back in, and it's always kind of like a two-person match. Being in a cage, obviously all three guys are there. I thought there was some great spots. I mean, like you said, I thought Miz had his neck broken the second he hit the mat. I cringed. You know, I thought they killed him right there, man, with that brainbuster. You know, Morrison, of course, always doing really cool stuff. I love the Starship Pain off the top of the cell. I thought that was awesome when he came down on top of Cena and Miz. You know, of course, like you said, R-Truth's spot played perfectly. I also think R-Truth's heel turn has just been so great, and I think that this has done wonders for his character, and I think a lot of people are getting invested in him now where, you know, 3 weeks ago nobody cared, and you know, so that's all, you know, great for his character. You know, overall, I just thought it was really good. I thought Cena played his part really well. I liked that Cena was kind of a little toned back in this match. He wasn't very super Cena in this one. I thought everybody kind of held their own pretty evenly. You know, my only downside to this is Cena becoming champion once again. You know, I had predicted that Miz would retain. In my heart of hearts, I of course wanted John Morrison to win, you know, because I would love, you know, for them to take that chance and go a whole different route. So yeah, it's a little sad to see Cena win the title once again, his 10th reign now. And, you know, according to what he said on Raw, he said he's going to be holding that belt all the way through to WrestleMania when he fights The Rock. So I just hope that's not true. If they plan on him being champ at WrestleMania, I hope to God he loses it at some point and gets it back later, because I do not want to see him for as champion for that long. But yeah, overall, I thought it was a very good match, good ending to the pay-per-view. I liked the whole thing a lot.
Yeah. Well, again, I don't think Cena's role changes at all, whether he's champion or not. So, you know, that's another thing. It's like he's going to be all over the show either way. He's going to be the focus of the show either way. I mean, he wasn't champion a decent amount of last year, and he obviously was the center of the show that way. So, you know, if it's not going to affect the guy's role, it doesn't really matter to me who the champion is. I guess that's kind of the crux of my, you know, of my deal with the belt, you know, as far as that goes. Yeah, I thought Cena actually, you know, he busted out, you know, he busted out some of the moveset here, did a monkey flip, you know, he did a couple of other things. He did put a nice dropkick, actually, that you don't normally see him do. So he had a nice night here. And actually, you know, he and Miz had a pretty good match on the Raw, you know, the night afterward, too. I mean, you know, I thought that was a really good, you know, pretty well laid out, you know, fun match that had a little bit of a silly dusty finish. Although I didn't mind, you know, when you're doing a TV match like that, I don't mind the dusty finish so much. I mean, it's different if it's on pay-per-view and it's ending a show, but if you're going to do, you know, the finish was that, Miz hit, Cena with the belt, referee didn't see it, but then the referee noticed that Miz was holding the belt, and although that was kind of silly, the idea that he would just disqualify him for that reason. But, you know, but you know, the idea of doing a, you know, swerve finish like that, I don't have a problem with on TV, and the match was good. So it made, and I thought made Miz, like, you know, look like he sort of belonged in there with Cena, where for a decent amount of the time, Miz sort of, you know, would, didn't look like he belonged in there with Cena, as far as kind of, you know, seeming like a joke. As far as, you know, as a wrestler, he's perfectly fine in there with Cena, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree. I liked the Monday match actually a lot. I thought Miz carried himself very well in the match. I thought he looked great. And, you know, I thought for a second they were going to actually give him the belt right back. So, you know, that was a great twist of, you know, him, you know, seeing the belt and, you know, reversing the decision and everything. So, yeah, overall, I thought it played out very well. They gave him a good amount of time to pull it off. And I was very happy with the Monday match.
Other highlights of the pay-per-view, the opener was Randy Orton defeating CM Punk in a last man standing match, obviously kind of ending the feud they've had over the last couple of months, which I thought was a pretty good feud. I, you know, a little disappointed that I kind of felt like it was sort of a chance for Punk to kind of get a win over a big star and, you know, make him look a little, you know, especially since Orton kind of ran through, you know, his entire group. And I don't think that group has really done a whole lot for Punk. I think, you know, kind of, I didn't really like it at first, and I just kind of think, I don't know, the guys who are in Nexus are just so, you know, are pretty bland and are pretty, you know, and have already been destroyed so many times that I just, you know, can't really take them too seriously as, you know, as backup for Punk. I guess except for Mason Ryan, who's been put over strong, but I think Mason Ryan is pretty awkward right now and doesn't really look so good in there when he tries to do stuff. Even so, he's big, obviously, and they seem to be kind of – they seem to be wanting to do something with him, but I don't see him being ready for that. But as far as this match go, I thought it was about as good as the WrestleMania match. You know, I thought it built real well. I thought the finish, you know, the building of the RK off the second rope was good. You know, and I thought, you know, people were definitely into the match and, you know, into the story. It was pretty, you know, I guess the story was pretty basic, but, nothing wrong with that sometimes. And, you know, I thought it was good stuff. What about you?
I loved it. I thought it was a great way to start the pay-per-view. I thought it was better than the WrestleMania match. I thought this was Randy Orton's best match in years. You know, I loved everything about it. I loved the brutality of it. I loved, you know, going onto the tables and going on the steel steps and the kendo sticks. You know, I saw pictures after the match of both of the guys, and I mean, they're just bruised up and down. You know, just their backs shattered from those kendo sticks. I mean, especially the one part where Orton, you know, was just whipping Punk like 50 times with the kendo stick was just insane. You know, I really dig brutal matches like that. And, you know, I love Extreme Rules for the fact that every match is extreme. And, you know, it's just something different. It plays off, you know, better than a normal pay-per-view normally would. That's what I was saying on our show, was that I love the placement of this pay-per-view now being the one after WrestleMania. You know, it used to be Backlash, and I like that they've shifted it around, took away Backlash, put Extreme Rules here, because, you know, we all knew, when they used to have Backlash, I mean, pretty much Backlash was just WrestleMania Part 2. It was all the rematches, and what I like about this is, even though, yeah, a lot of the matches are rematches from WrestleMania, you now get at least, you know, a gimmick behind it, a cage match, a ladder match, you know, stretcher match, last man standing match, you know, falls count anywhere, whatever, you know, which gives the, you know, each match its own kind of special, you know, attraction to it. So I think that's awesome. And I thought this match was just great. It got me really psyched for the whole pay-per-view. And I just thought it was a great way to kick off the show. Mm-hmm.
And next match was a Kofi Kingston beating Sheamus to win the in a tables match to win the United States Championship. What were your thoughts on this match?
I liked it too. You know, I had heard the rumors they were going to do this match, and I think it was pretty apparent why. You know, Sheamus was drafted to SmackDown, and Sheamus is the U.S. champ. So SmackDown had both mid-card titles. Obviously, they had to get the title back to Raw. So, it was kind of a no-brainer when they announced it. Obviously, they just wanted to get, you know, Kofi to grab the title, bring it back to Raw. So you knew Kofi was going to win. I was really liking Sheamus as the United States champion, and I like him being drafted to SmackDown, though, too. So it was kind of, once again, you know, I hated that he had to lose the title, but, you know, hopefully bigger and better things are, you know, in store for him down the road. But I thought it was a great match. I thought the ending of the match was awesome. Kofi doing the boom, boom leg drop from the top rope all the way to the floor, putting Sheamus through a table when Sheamus is in a stand-up position was just insane. I mean, it was a crazy finish to the match. You know, tables match, it was a great addition, nice bonus that nobody was really expecting, and it did its job. Kept the pay-per-view rolling in a very nice way.
Yeah, a little bit of poetic justice for Sheamus too, because he lost the this title in the tables match after, of course, he won his first title in a tables match. So,
yep.
The one thing about you know, Sheamus and Barrett, I guess, kind of being like the two, you know, top bad guys on SmackDown, is that, you know, if they're going to work with Orton, we've seen Sheamus and Orton quite a lot. We saw Sheamus and Barrett and Orton a decent amount too. So I you know, you talked about Mark Henry and Orton, and, you know, I like Mark Henry better than most, but I don't think Mark Henry Orton is going to be a pay-per-view feud. So I don't think a whole lot of people are going to really want to see that. So it'll be interesting to see what they, you know, who they have for Orton, because you know the kind of the guys they have right now. You know, we've kind of seen all that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what's funny is that, I mean, you know, even though they did a bunch of people in the draft, I mean, you basically just, you know, you're just going to see a lot of the same feuds now under a different banner. And, yeah, I have the same feeling, you know, we're going to get, you know, Sheamus and Orton again, and we've seen it, and, you know, Orton and Barrett possibly, stuff like that. You know, and as far as the Mark Henry thing goes, I mean, you know, I'm not a Mark Henry fan by any stretch of the imagination, but all signs are pointing towards a huge push for him. Everything I have read is, you know, he's pretty much nearing the end of his, you know, contract, the end of his career. He's probably only got like a year left, you know, and he's pretty much vowed to have a title run at some point in this next year. And I know that, you know, they turned him heel and put him on SmackDown, and he's supposed to have a gigantic push behind him. And as much as I agree with you that I don't think Randy Orton versus Mark Henry is a big selling point for a pay-per-view, unfortunately, I feel that that's what we're going to be seeing here.
Yeah, certainly possible. You know, I'm fine with that as a TV feud, but yeah, it's pay-per-view feud. That's, you know, maybe one, but, you know, but we'll see. So anyway, the next match was Michael Cole and Jack Swagger against Jim Ross and Drea Lawler, a tag team country whipping match, and they kept
this.
This
was your favorite match of the card, wasn't it?
It was not my favorite match of the card. I didn't dislike it. I didn't really like it. Particularly, I thought it was, you know, it was pretty well laid out. The only thing that I thought was really silly was Jim Ross putting Jack Swagger in the ankle lock. I thought that was pretty dumb. But the length I thought was fine. I thought, you know, the way they kind of set up the finish where, you know, Ross and Swagger, you know, were in there, and then Cole was able to get the roll up, I thought was, you know, a good finish, you know, if you're going to continue the feud. Although I question at this point whether the feud should continue. It feels like it's kind of run its course. I mean, I guess you could just, I hope that if they're going to continue, but I hope they just do a Lawler Cole match on TV where, you know, with some sort of, you know, Cole has to leave Raw, or Cole has to stop being an announcer, or JR becomes an announcer, or whatever, you know, whatever big stipulation you want to do. I guess you could do it with pay-per-view if it should be, the next pay-per-view should be its last, you know, point. I think, you know, and I kind of didn't get a sense that the crowd was super into this. I mean, they were okay with it. They certainly didn't, you know, they didn't lose it like they did at WrestleMania for those couple minutes when Cole was beating up Lawler. But yeah, I think it's kind of, you know, it certainly, it's a feud that's had some really cool moments, but you know, they need to find a way to end it.
They need to end this so fast. I cannot believe that this is going to make it to a third pay-per-view.
You didn't like any of the angles they did on TV?
I didn't mind some of the stuff they did on TV, but I'm just talking about these pay-per-view matches. Wasting, you know, a spot on a card on this pay-per-view, because, like, you know, the WrestleMania thing was a joke. This was a joke. I would have bet everything on the fact that Lawler and Jim Ross were going to win this on Sunday. And when Michael Cole won with the roll up, my jaw dropped. I could not believe it, because not only could I believe that they did that again, but that they were stretching this out to continue once again. I don't know why they feel this is like that big of an angle that they need to just keep going again and again and again. You know, it needs to end. For the love of God, I hope it ends at Over the Limit. And I just want these guys, like you said, I mean, I hope something happens that gets Cole off TV for a little bit, and, you know, Lawler can just go back to being an announcer, and we can just be done with this, because it's a joke. I mean, this was obviously 10 million times better than the WrestleMania match. You know, at least they had, you know, the whips, and it was, you know, a little entertaining. Michael Cole and the bubble wrap was funny, you know, but I just, you know, the biggest beef out of this is just the fact that they're going to continue this angle.
Next match, let's go on to that. It was Rey Mysterio against Cody Rhodes, a Falls Count Anywhere match, and I also really enjoyed this match. Definitely kind of the end of the line for this feud as well, but this has been one of my favorite feuds. I mean, definitely my favorite feud of the year so far. just you know, the Cody Rhodes character. I mean, we've talked about it, how just, you know, how deep and in, you know, in depth, and how interesting that character has been, and kind of the whole, you know, Jekyll and Hyde personality thing, and, you know, Cody just being so damaged by this. And I thought it was a really good brawl. I think Ray is underrated as far as you know, his ability to, you know, have be a brawler. I think he's, you know, really good. He has good strikes. You know, he's able to, you know, put up a good fight despite his size. Obviously, the size isn't really a huge issue with somebody who's, you know, Cody's size. It's usually an issue with somebody when he's like trying to fight Kane or something. But, yeah, man, they, you know, they obviously went around the building. I thought they, you know, they used the false count anywhere stuff well, used the stage well, and, you know, and built to a fun match. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I very much enjoyed this also. You know, this was just keeping in line of, you know, everything being just really good on this pay-per-view. I like this feud as well. I thought this feud has been done very well. I, you know, expected Rey Mysterio to win this one just because I just didn't see him losing two times in a row. I thought Rey was going to actually win at WrestleMania. So when Cody went over there, I knew, I figured he'd, you know, go over Extreme Rules. But yeah, no, they played everything just great. I mean, it was fast paced. It was fun. I love fighting through the crowd. I love when they went, you know, upstairs in the back and they actually did moves. You know, Cody doing the jumping kick off the wall and then Ray doing the moonsault off the bar. I mean, they actually utilized their setting, you know, very well. Mm-hmm. And I was just really shocked that they actually made the pinfall in the ring for a Falls Count Anywhere match. That's something you don't see very often. But, you know, I liked that they started there. They went up. They did their thing, you know, all around the arena. Then they came back and finished the match. So all in all, I mean, it was a great match and a good end to that feud.
Yeah, and you know, some of those matches where, you know, the Falls Count Anywhere or the Hardcore or whatever, where they do like the crowd brawling or whatever, just feels like a lot of that is stuff where they're kind of just stalling for time, where they're just not really a point to it, but it kind of felt like everything in this match sort of had a point and was sort of leading to something else. And I thought it was just the structure of it was really good. And, you know, like I said, a great feud and going to be one of my favorites of the year for sure. Next up was Layla defeating Michelle McCool, and Michelle loser leaves a WWE match, and a pretty good match. You know, they worked hard anyway. I think the breakup just happened so quick, and I imagine that it's probably just because, you know, Michelle was leaving and they decided to do it now. That kind of messed up the timing. It would have been better if they'd have been able to have a few more weeks to kind of, you know, build it up and have Layla be more sympathetic, and, you know, so forth. But, you know, they certainly tried hard. I thought that the most memorable thing, of course, was the end of it after Layla won and Michelle was in the ring crying, and suddenly Karma came out and made her debut. And that really got a giant reaction when she came out and she stalked into the ring, and then she hit Michelle with her move and just kind of, you know, basically crushed her. And thought that was a really cool debut, and I think I'm pretty excited for, you know, what they're gonna do with Karma, with her just kind of being the you know, the beast that takes out all of the you know, petite pretty little WWE women. And obviously, you know, eventually they'll try to build up, you know, a hero to conquer her. And I think that's, you know, obviously it's a real basic wrestling storyline, but we haven't seen that with the WWE women, because, you know, every WWE woman is, you know, small and pretty and, you know, kind of all, you know, a little bit in the same mold. And Karma is definitely in a very different mold. So I hope they, you know, keep moving in the direction that they are. And, you know, it seems like, you know, she really has, you know, gotten a good reaction so far. And I think that's an encouraging sign.
Yeah. Everything's worked so well so far in this angle. And, you know, just quick, before we talk about Karma, just talking about the Divas match, I thought it was a great match. I thought this was one of the best women's matches we've seen in quite some time. Layla has just gotten so good in the ring. And, you know, Michelle's always been pretty decent, you know. So, I mean, they just work so well together. And, you know, it's crazy what kind of happened with that angle, too. I mean, You know, originally it was supposed to be Loser Leaves SmackDown match, and Michelle McCool was going to actually go to Raw. And then, you know, like the Friday before the pay-per-view, all of a sudden it's saying Michelle McCool's got these injuries and she's going to go home and she actually is going to be leaving the company. So it was pretty obvious Layla was going to win. I was already, you know, predicting Layla was going to win anyway. I mean, because, you know, with the Loser Leaves, you know, SmackDown match, you know, we figured, you know, Michelle was going to go to Raw. But, you know, then they made the quick change to the match that it was Loser Leaves WWE. You know, so kind of crazy. I mean, you know, I don't think anybody really expected Michelle McCool to be leaving the company. And from all signs, this looks like it's actually going to be this way for a long time. The original reports were saying that she was going to be just, you know, healing up some injuries and stuff, and she'd be back in a couple months. But from everything I'm seeing now, she is looking to just settle down and just be a housewife and start a family with The Undertaker. As, you know, for anybody that doesn't know, she's married to The Undertaker, and, you know, that she's done. She is done now. So, you know, I mean, if that's the case, then, you know, thanks, Michelle McCool. I mean, you know, job well done. But, yeah, I mean, it was just a great match. It was a cool ending. And then Karma's debut, just great. I mean, they did everything perfect there. Karma's music is awesome. Her look was great. You know, her coming down to the ring and just grabbing her, hitting that implant buster, and then just kind of, you know, smiling and laughing and the music coming back on. What I really loved was the fact that they cut to the back and they showed all the divas watching on the monitor in the back, looking completely scared out of their mind. And you know, at that point, it was just, you know, as Corey on our Future Endeavor show said, it just, a star was born. And, you know, and that can't be said any other way. I mean, it's been a long time since WWE made a star right off the bat, and they have definitely done that with Karma. So, you know, they've done everything, you know, right so far with her to set her up, that everybody's already initially scared and you're expecting her to come out and just, you know, whoop. And, you know, she did it again on Raw, and according to the SmackDown spoilers, she does it again on Friday. So, you know, doesn't look like she's attached to any brand right now. It looks like she'll just be coming out and just crushing all the divas. But so far, she's only crushing the heel divas, so it looks like she is kind of a face, even though she's destroying everybody. So, kind of funny on that one. But, yeah, I mean, job well done to WWE for, you know, creating a star literally in, you know, a minute and a half. So, you know, I'm very, you know, excited, you know, to see what they do moving forward with Karma and the Divas division.
Yeah, and obviously she was a highlight in TNA for a few years, so we know that she can go in the ring. And so it'll be, you know, the WWE Women's Division, I think it's improved over the last, you know, 6 months to a year. It seems like the in-ring's been generally better, and you know, they have some, you know, some decent talent. I mean, they have, obviously have Natalya, and Beth Phoenix, and, you know, Layla's gotten pretty good. I think Kelly's improved. Actually, I think even the Bellas have improved a little bit. And I really like the Bellas as characters. You know, in the ring, they're still not much. But, and, you know, Eve tries pretty hard in any case. She's a little clumsy, but, you know, she's at least trying to kind of do different things and have a different style. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, she definitely tries. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And they got Melina too. I mean,
yeah, and Melina, yeah, you know, uses her flexibility well, and that's always good. So, and then the last match that, you know, really not worth mentioning a whole lot, but Big Show and Kane defeating Wade Barrett and Ezekiel Jackson in a lumberjack match, which was basically the cool-down match in between the ladder match for the world title and the triple threat match for the WWE title. So what were your thoughts on this fine 4-minute and 17-second match?
Yeah, exactly. it was exactly what you expected. I mean, it was the cool-down match. But, you know, it was still a pleasant little surprise at the same time. You know, I wasn't really expecting another match in between. You know, I thought for sure that they were going to put Michelle McCool and Layla in between the world title matches. So when they went on first and then the ladder match happened, I was like, wow, they're going to actually do the two title matches back to back. So, yeah, it was a pleasant surprise. I actually was pulling for Wade and Ezekiel to win the tag titles. I thought that'd be pretty cool for them to do. To kind of, you know, punk out, you know, there's been so much tension in the core lately, and for them to kind of gloat to Gabriel and Slater, you know, like, hi, you guys couldn't get the job done, and we did, you know, plus I would love to see Gold around Ezekiel's waist, and it'd be cool to see Barrett with two titles. So I was kind of hoping they'd go that route. Unfortunately, they didn't, and they went, you know, just with the quick squash, and you know, and the Lumberjacks did their thing, and there was a couple moments with the outside of everybody brawling. You know, so it was what it was. Obviously, it wasn't a spectacular match, but it was, you know, for the 4 minutes they had, it was pretty entertaining to keep the pay per view rolling. So.
So now, what do you think of them doing? I mean, to me, it seems like they're kind of doing the same thing with Ezekiel in the core and Mason Ryan with Nexus. They're kind of obviously building them up as the monsters and kind of splitting them off from the groups. Do you think that they'll end up teaming up and then going after Big Show and Kane to kind of doing the monster versus monster thing?
I think that would be great. I actually never thought about that until you said it right now. But I don't. I think that they're just going to... they're obviously doing exactly that for both of these guys. It looked like pretty much on Monday night, you know, that Mason Ryan just kind of walked off and Punk's looking at him like, you know, where are you going? And he just kind of, you know, did his own thing. So obviously it looks like he's on the way out of Nexus, which I think will be great because, you know, even though Mason Ryan's still a little green in there, I think that there's a lot of potential behind that guy. And, I mean, you know, look how green, you know, Batista was in the beginning and look what he turned out to be. I mean, you know, I mean, the potential's there and the guy's got a great look. So, you know, I'm pulling for Mason Ryan. You know, I felt that, you know, he could have been somebody that if he would have just debuted right off the bat solo as Mason Ryan and just dominated, you know, he could have had a great debut like we just talked about, like kind of like how Karma got, you know, but they put him in Nexus and he kind of got overshadowed and he got kind of clumped in with all these guys that lose all the time. So it's like nobody really paid much attention, but they're starting now to kind of push him in that monster type role. You know, I mean, he gave Kane, you know, a great match on Monday where they, you know, where they just, you know, he was matching his power and, you know, Kane couldn't dominate him, you know? So I like that they're separating him from the group, and the exact same thing is happening for the core. You know, they've had a lot of tension for weeks now, and once again, you know, the spoilers on Friday pretty much, you know, seems like they kick Ezekiel out of the group and beat him down and send him packing on his way. So I expect, you know, a good face turn for Ezekiel, and he'll get his revenge. And, you know, I think that'll be good for Zeke. It's not good for the core. If the core continues, I don't think that they're very legit without that big muscle behind them. I thought that that's where, you know, Ezekiel played his role very well. But I like Ezekiel a lot. So I think, you know, separating him from the group will be a good thing for him. I think the core will need to maybe bring Skip Sheffield back and add him to the mix to be their muscle again, you know, to put them back looking strong. But, you know, I like the new direction, and I hope that they continue to push Ryan and Ezekiel, you know, separately away from the groups.
Yeah, I'm pretty much done with the core, honestly. I kind of think just wait to be on his own, and that would be better for him. I think just kind of been stuck in kind of anonymous groups for too long. I don't think the core thing related a whole lot for him. I think Ezekiel's okay. I think Mason Ryan, I don't think he's even close to being ready, honestly. I thought that match on Raw was pretty bad. I mean, he tries, and, you know, but I think that he is very, very likely to fail if they try to put too much on him right away. Ezekiel's better. I think he, you know, I think he could do okay. And I think it's an interesting idea to do the tag team. But I don't know. I always think it's weird when they like have, I mean, the way they've kind of tried to do like the core and Nexus since the split have kind of just been like those stories have been mirrors of each other. And it's always weird when they'll do that. They'll do like kind of the same thing on SmackDown after they've done it on Raw. And I never understand like why they seem, you know, why they do that. I don't really understand. It's sort of like, I saw the same thing on Raw. I don't need see the same thing with different guys in SmackDown, you know, like they always kind of like fall in love with an idea and repeat it. And It is
and it isn't with the way that they're doing this. Because with Nexus, they're making it look like Mason Ryan's kind of making his own decision to walk away. You know, like he's just saying, I'm done with it. I'm a beast and I'm being held back. You know, I'm out. Where with Ezekiel, you know, they basically, it seems like they kicked him out of the group. Like they beat him down and they said, you know, nice working with you. you know, see you later kind of thing, you know, to where they kicked him out, where the Nexus one was, you know, you got Punk, McGillicuddy, Otunga all standing there like, where are you going? You know, like, I mean, you know, they're still a group and they'll still continue to do their thing, where, you know, Core is basically on the verge of just, you know, exploding, and they're just going to disband here probably in a couple weeks anyway. You know, I mean, Gabriel and Slater can't get along anymore. You know, Wade's starting to get his big head again, where, you know, originally the whole point of the Core was supposed to be there's no leader and we're all equals, and now, you know, Barrett's kind of saying, you know, that's, you know, there's no point of that anymore, you know, you need me to lead you because you guys can't do anything on your own, and there's just all this dissension, and then that's where Ezekiel started kind of pulling from them. So, you know, I mean, it is, you know, obviously the outcome will be the same thing as the two big musclehead guys will leave the groups, but at least they're tweaking it a little bit to where more like, you know, Mason's leaving on his own, and then Ezekiel's kind of getting, you know, pushed out of the group.
Okay, that's fair. I hadn't thought about that way, but that's definitely a good observation. Any other major happenings in the WWE? I guess we could talk about the Rock on Raw. That was kind of he certainly was definitely the focus of Raw.
Yeah, I mean, it was his birthday, and it was a birthday. It was, the whole episode was billed as a celebration, you know, for The Rock. And I mean, why not, man? It's been a great week for The Rock. You know, he knew about Osama bin Laden's death before anybody did, and he, you know, had the biggest movie over the weekend, making $86 million in Fast Five. You know, it was his birthday on Monday. I mean, the guy was, you know, it's his time, man. Let's celebrate it. And I had no qualms about it. You know, it's not like we see The Rock every week on Raw. So I know some people bitch that, you know, there wasn't much, you know, wrestling on Monday and it was too focused on The Rock. But you know what? I thought it was a cool program. I liked that they had the little videos of all the celebrities wishing Rock happy birthday. You know, I liked the little backstage skits. Obviously, he came out in the beginning of the show and killed it. And I thought the end of the show was great. Vince McMahon coming out, which I read was totally unscripted. The Rock had no idea Vince was going to come out and play that promo package. So I thought that was, like, totally cool. And you could see the emotion in Rock's face when they came out and did that. I mean, he was, you know, very happy. And, you know, it was a great time to see, you know, the promo package that they did, you know, going through his, you know, childhood and everything and making it to the WWE. And it was just a great package. Of course, once again, hats off to the WWE production crew. I thought just everything worked, you know, I mean, you got that great Cena Miz match in the middle, and, I thought it was a good Raw. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. I thought the end was good with the video and Vince coming out. The opening, it wasn't bad, but it was just a little bit, it was kind of what Rock has done the last four times I've seen him. It was just sort of like, I mean, it was good. It was fun, but I think they've, I've gotten to the point where I've seen Rock kind of just do the Rock thing enough where the next time I see Rock, if I were to see him again soon, I would want him to do something more. Not that I didn't enjoy seeing him, and not that, you know, the stuff he did wasn't fun, but it was just sort of like, you know, okay, the novelty of Rock coming back and being involved in things is done, at least for a long time. Now, if he doesn't come back till, like, Royal Rumble and they build up the Cena match, then, you know, then it'll be exciting again. But right now, which is sort of like, you know, Rock's here, and yeah, and then that's cool, but it's not like, you know, doing a whole lot for me other than that. There was, it took a while for them to get a good match, but there certainly was, a couple good ones. That the Drew McIntyre and, who was it, Sheamus?
It was Drew and Jack Swagger Kofi and Ray. That was a very good match.
That's right. Yeah, that was a good match. Yeah.
I like that combo. I never thought of that combo before, but I think Drew and Jack actually make a really good tag team.
Yeah.
And so does Kofi and Ray, actually. So that was a good two new teams that they just kind of threw together that maybe I hope they do something further with.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah, I like both those combinations. And Drew and Swagger against Sho and Kane, I think that'd be interesting. I think that would be fun. And then Drew and Swagger are both big enough where, you know, you could see them as being, you know, I mean, I guess Swagger could suplex. He certainly could suplex Kane. I don't know about Big Show, but that could be a fun, you know, 1 month thing or whatever. If they decide to keep the titles on Kane and Big Show for a while, but any other thoughts on happenings recently in WWE?
Let's see what else. I mean, just last word on the pay-per-view was just, you know, that I loved it. I thought it was one of the best pay-per-views they've had in a while. I thought everything, every match on the card was very, very solid. Kind of take out the, you know, the Lawler Cole match. Every other match was really, really good. So, I mean, the whole pay-per-view worked, and, you know, definitely recommend it to anybody that didn't get a chance to watch it to check it out. As far as other happenings, you know, I just, I guess the other biggest news is obviously the draft. You know, get, you know, your views on the draft.
Well, who went who where again? No, I'm just kidding. you know, I didn't really have any major positives or negatives. It doesn't seem like you've seen her in Alberto Rio. That could be kind of interesting when they do that. At least it's a new opponent for Cena. It's not someone I've seen 1,000 times against Cena, which is good. You know, other than that, I don't know what really changed. Yeah, I mean, we've already talked about Orton enough. I don't really know what changed that. You know, makes dramatic difference on any of the shows. I mean, it's not like the talent mix is that big of a deal. Yeah, and you know, we've been through the whole brand split, and you know, they kind of ignore it when it's convenient anyway. So it's not really, you know, there aren't really a whole lot of like fresh combinations where, you know, I can see, oh, this guy moved here and now he can have an exciting feud with this guy. I mean, other than, you know, like I said, other than Cena Del Rio, there's nothing that, you know, jumps out at me as being like, you know, wow, that's cool. I guess, you know, it'll be an opportunity to see if somebody can step up to be, you know, the, you know, a top heel on SmackDown. You know, we've obviously talked about Sheamus and Barrett. I think Cody Rhodes is prime for that too. You know, so there's, you know, and maybe Daniel Bryan kind of gets a bigger role on SmackDown since, you know, he's basically probably, you know, behind Orton and Christian, kind of the number three guy on that side, you know, and, so I think Daniel Bryan and Cody Rhodes as a feud would be really fun. Yeah, that's a match I get pretty excited about. So, but you know, as far as like big things, you know, there's nothing off the top of my head that I can think of that would be, you know, really too big.
Yeah, I'll run it down here. Raw got Rey Mysterio, Big Show, Alberto Del Rio, Jack Swagger, Kelly Kelly, JTG, Drew McIntyre, Kurt Hawkins, Kofi Kingston, Tyler Rex, and Beth Phoenix. SmackDown got Randy Orton, Mark Henry, Sin Cara, Daniel Bryan, The Great Khali, The Usos, Alicia Fox, William Regal, Yoshitatsu, Natalya, Ted DiBiase, Tyson Kidd, Tamina, Alex Riley, and Sheamus. Overall, I thought it was a great mix-up of the brands. I liked it a lot. The only ones I wasn't too hot on was I didn't like Rey and Kofi going to Raw because I felt that both, you know, previous times those two guys were on Raw, they kind of got shafted a lot. I mean, Kofi had that one good little run with Orton on Raw, but other than that, I mean, he just never got much of a chance to shine. I thought that he shined so much better on SmackDown. But I think SmackDown made out very, very well, honestly. I mean, you know, I think moving Sin Cara there was great. Daniel Bryan, I think, truly needs to be on SmackDown, so I hope he does get a chance to shine. I think Ted DiBiase truly, truly needed this. I heard he'll actually be a face on SmackDown, which I think will be a good shakeup for him. You know, Sheamus, obviously, I think, you know, having new people to work with as well. So, I mean, overall, I thought it was really good. There was only a couple people I didn't really, you know, think was a good move. But other than that, I thought the draft was a good shakeup.
Yeah, I do agree. I think Sin Cara on SmackDown will be good, and I think that's a kind of a place where he can shine. I think the difference for Rey on Raw this time is that he there's not as much depth on Raw as there was a couple years ago. I mean, he's not behind Orton, he's not behind a couple of the guys, so I think they'll kind of have to turn to him as long as he's healthy, you know, more than they would have a couple of years ago. But you know, yeah, you're right. Last time he was on Raw, it was fine. It wasn't a bad. You know, was certainly didn't have a bad year or anything, but yeah, SmackDown's always kind of been where he's kind of had a better thing. But I do see, you know, maybe you don't want Sin Cara and Rey on the same show. You know, having them on different shows, there's, you know, probably more advantages to that right now, and maybe eventually you could do a match between them or do a team up between them, and you could make it really special if they're, you know, separated for a while. So,
So I see your qualms, but I think overall I can see why they did it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there's always a bigger thing. What I'm hoping out of it, at least for like Curt Hawkins was the other one that I really don't think he should have gone to Raw. But with Zack Ryder staying on Raw, I'm hoping at least they maybe pair Curt Hawkins back up with Zack Ryder, where they were originally a tag team, you know, years ago, and they were a good unit together. So I'm hoping they, you know, at least can do something with them, hopefully together before we unfortunately see some future endeavors go down.
Mm-hmm. So we got some questions here. So why don't we answer them? Let's see. First of all, from 69 Wrestling, we have the he asks, what if any changes would you make if you were running the WWE? So that's obviously a pretty open-ended, you know, huge spanning question. So let's see, what changes would I make if I were running WWE? Well, more fat guys.
There you go.
Yeah, I like, you know, we
bring Husky Harris back.
Yeah, we need some guys with different sizes and different bodies and different looks. I think, you know, there's a lot of things, but I think the big thing, the number one thing, I would try to have more of an open mind when it came to bringing in guys who look different, who act different, who, you know, didn't really fit. Like, there's a bit of a cookie cutter WWE mold, and they've actually, you know, in recent months, they've actually kind of expanded on that. You know, they've brought in Sin Cara, they've brought in Karma. You know, there's a couple other people where they've brought them in and kind of even, you know, seem like they're getting behind them, you know, right away and not, you know, they seem to be kind of be more open to doing things differently. And I don't know if that's, you know, the influence of Triple H, you know, being more involved in decision making now, or just a coincidence, or what have you. But I would, you know, I don't know. I like seeing as many types of guys and, you know, guys from different backgrounds you know, just as much diversity as possible, both like in look and in wrestling style, and, you know, in some more flexibility in your storytelling. I mean, really just, you know, trying to get out of like some of the, like the typical, you know, wrestling molds and, you know, not being afraid to have something that's challenging or have something that's interesting, or have something that's different and have something that's smart, you know? So I would try to make the product as smart, a diverse, and as fun as it could possibly be. How about you?
Oh, where do I start? that's a gigantic question and a great question at the same time, because I would love to have an opportunity to run the WWE, especially when we talk about all the gripes we have. For one, you know, I'd put a lot of focus, obviously, back on championships, like we talked about. Really, you know, put the main focus on the shows surrounding the champions. I mean, that's what it's really all about. I'd make sure that the rosters stayed separated, first and foremost. You know, so like how it was originally. I mean, you know, you really only got that crossover at the Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, and WrestleMania. That's really the only times you would ever see anybody kind of clash from outside, you know, their normal world. Sometimes, I guess, at SummerSlam, if you have like a backstage segment, since all the rosters were there. But other than that, you know, it kind of stayed separated. And, you know, with that being said, you know, if I had the roster separated, the first thing I would do, I'd want to bring back the Cruiserweight Championship. I would, you know, separate the tag team titles again, put a big focus back on the tag team wrestling. You know, because, I mean, look at how many guys are on this roster right now that they're not doing a damn thing with. They can easily just pair them together and make a new tag team. Just like how we just said on Raw, all of a sudden, boom, Jack Swagger, Drew McIntyre, love it, new tag team, done. Rey Mysterio, Kofi Kingston, new tag team, boom, done. You know, Curt Hawkins, Zack Ryder, done. Put Tyler Rex with somebody. You know, I mean, there's so many guys they're not doing anything with that they could, you know, make this tag team division super strong. And, you know, so I you know, ununify the tag team titles, have one for Raw, have one for SmackDown, possibly even the same thing with the Women's Championship, you know, really putting it back to where just each brand is completely separate, so each brand has its own set of champions. You know, I'd be looking to, you know, push a lot of newer people. You know, I'd be giving people their opportunities, like Daniel Bryan and, Tyson Kidd and, you know, guys like that. I mean, Tyler Rexes and Chris Masters. I mean, these guys that are just getting kind of shat on, I'd be giving those opportunities. Christian, it's good to have the big names, and, you know, you can always fall back on them when you need them. But it's time to build some new stars, you know, and that's obviously what, you know, I would really be focusing on if I was running it right now.
All right. Good stuff. Next question is from Blackdemus Prime. And chances via percentage that Alberto Del Rio will win the WWE title at SummerSlam. I will say 28%.
I will say, I've been saying for a long time now that I think Del Rio is going to win the title at SummerSlam. So that's a funny question because I almost want to say 100% right now, but obviously so many things can change by then. I think if he's in the title match at SummerSlam, 100% he'll be the new champ at SummerSlam.
All right. All right. Well, that's a bold statement. Next question is from Colin Young. What are your thoughts on the WWE title as a narrative prop right now, given the long-term direction of the Cena-Rock feud? And they certainly teased, one more outright said that Cena believes that he'll be the champion at WrestleMania, and Rock Cena being for the title, that's sort of an interesting idea. You've said that you don't really want Cena to be champion for a whole year, and I can understand that, but at the same time, I do think that if Cena had held the belt for a year and then faced Rock for it at WrestleMania, that would certainly make the title make the title seem like a more significant part of it. Just given that long reign, and if you kind of built as a sort of a side idea, is that like Rock still wants to prove himself as being a great wrestler, and the way you become a great wrestler is by winning the title. I think there's some interest there. I don't think certainly that it's not going to need the title. I'm not sure how much the title really adds to the match, but it's an interesting idea actually. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's a great idea. I mean, like exactly how Cena said. I mean, how do you make the biggest match of all time even bigger? Make it for the WWE Championship. You know, regardless of how much value the belt has at this point, it will make that match bigger. I mean, being that it's, for the championship. So, I had heard rumors that they were going to go this direction. I didn't expect Cena to win it this early on. I just figured they were going to make sure he had it, at some point before WrestleMania. Like I said, I mean, I'm still saying I don't want him. I can see what you're saying. Obviously, yeah, it would probably be mean a lot more if Cena did hold it from now all the way to WrestleMania. And then it's like, ooh, what if he loses it now? That Rock's the one that put an end to that gigantic reign. But I just can't stand to fathom the fact of Cena holding the belt that long from now all the way to WrestleMania. It's just too long of a time. But, like I said, I mean, I think it's a good prop for that match, and I think that, it's the only thing they can do to make the match, any bigger than what it already is.
Yeah. It all depends on, how they structure the story, and, if they don't even, mention the title during the build, then it's not going to mean anything. But if they, put a little bit of focus on it and put, Rock gives it a few looks, or he does a promo saying, how much it meant to him when he was champion, and going through the lineage and things like that, then yeah, it could add to it, and it could be an interesting story. So it all depends. But we've been through kind of the other part of the question of whether the value of the title and such, so we don't need to hash through that again. But it'll be interesting to see. I think most likely Cena loses at some point, probably to Del Rio at SummerSlam, and then regains it, sometime in the fall or the winter. But gosh, they could trade it. They could change it 10 times between now and WrestleMania. I mean, who knows what they'll do? But
exactly, I have to envision at some point in the next year, Del Rio will definitely have it, and definitely think in SummerSlam. But Del Rio's got to get it at some point, because I truly believe Del Rio was was supposed to get the title at Extreme Rules before Edge, you know, retired. Like when it was supposed to be him versus Edge, Del Rio was supposed to become the champ at that point. The draft wasn't supposed to happen right now. They ended up pushing the draft up, and you know, Del Rio was going to go to Raw later down the road and all this stuff. So that kind of got all shifted because of, you know, Edge and everything. So Del Rio kind of had to take a back seat. So, you know, it's like they've already teased it so many times of him winning the Rumble and then not getting that moment at WrestleMania, and then you thought, okay, he's going to definitely get it at Extreme Rules, and then Edge retired and, you know, all this stuff. So, I mean, there's no doubt that Del Rio will get it at some point now that he's on Raw between now and WrestleMania. So they're going to have to, at least if it is only one title change, it'll be that at least.
All right. And then our good friend Gino Marasco asks, how hilariously stupid was it for John Cena to announce Bin Laden's death the way that he did? I actually didn't watch that, so although it did seem a little like, well, the funny part to me about that was like the words that he used to express it, and let's see if I can pull up exactly how he put it, because
yeah, he said that they have permanently caught and compromised Osama bin Laden.
Yes, the president has just announced that we have caught and compromised to a permanent end Osama bin Laden. Yes, because you can't say killed on a PG show, apparently. Exactly, even though it's like a real news event. I don't know that. That was pretty ridiculous. I mean, it was obviously off the cuff, and they probably didn't put too much thought into how they did it. So, other than apparently very specific wording,
yeah, somebody must have fed him that, because I doubt that he came to that.
Right. So, yeah, that was pretty crazy. Obviously, you know, finding out. You know, I watched the show later. I wasn't watching it live. So, obviously that news event pretty much overshadowed anything that was going on in wrestling or going on in the world or anything. So, that was obviously the focus of that night, and, pretty interesting. Of course, I made the unfortunate joke that, you know, WWE was fine with announcing Bin Laden's death at the end of the show, but they couldn't bother to announce Owen Hart's death at the end of that show. So, but... Oh, you're not going to laugh at my joke?
Well, that's not a joke.
Come on. It's kind of funny. I don't know. It's dark humor.
Dark, yeah.
All right. Well, fair enough.
They announced. I mean, I knew during the pay-per-view broadcast. broadcast.
Yes.
That Owen had died in the middle of that pay-per-view. Well, so, I'm sure the crowd had to have known.
Tell the live crowd.
They didn't tell the live crowd, huh? Well, I never knew that.
They did not tell the live crowd. Yeah. People were a little bit upset about that when they found out after the show was done. So.
Huh. Interesting.
Anyway, yeah. So,
I mean, as far as the Cena thing goes, I didn't see that until I got home. That wasn't part of the pay-per-view. They didn't show that at the end of the pay-per-view. So right. It's not like that's how the show ended.
Yeah.
I was like, a bonus video that they released after the fact, and I watched it, and I agree with the question you got, because it was pretty stupid the way he said it. I mean, like I said, that was my first thought too, was what, you can't say killed on a PG broadcast.
Yeah.
You know, that he just had to word it so perfectly. And yeah. It's funny because they cut to the audience and you can clearly see on a lot of people's faces, they're like, what's he talking about?
Yeah.
You know, like, what do you mean they caught to a permanent end?
Like, yeah.
Looking at each other and like, I think I should be cheering right now, but I don't really get what he's saying.
Yeah.
It's like, instead of him just getting on the mic and saying, Osama's dead.
Yeah. So, we got him. All right. Yeah,
exactly. You know, like, we got him. Hustle, loyalty, respect. You know, but yeah, I thought it was pretty stupid too. I don't know. You know, they tried to. I don't know. It was stupid. I agree with the question.
All right. Let's see. Every other question we got, pretty much we've addressed stuff.
Yeah, a lot of Christian questions. So
yes,
you guys know how we feel about that.
Yeah, we're strongly in favor of that. So anything else that you come to mind? Oh, you know what we should talk about? We don't really talk about TNA on our shows, but there is one pretty newsworthy another spoiler for people for TNA. Is there a long time? She hasn't been around in a long time, but apparently China is being brought in as Kurt Angle's mistress, and I haven't really been watching TNA much lately because it kind of, I thought it they were having a couple good months and it kind of fell off a cliff for me. And basically, Scott Steiner's promos are really the only thing that I really enjoyed too much on TNA. Sometimes Ric Flair's stuff too, but yeah, you know, bringing China back after all these years seems like even on the TNA scale level of ridiculous seems pretty ridiculous. So, I don't know if you have any thoughts on seeing China again and how weird that might be. You know,
you know what? I actually don't mind it. I really don't mind it. I mean, you know,
you sir are a crazy person.
You know, I mean, TNA is just so whatever at this point. Which, you know, this might be one of the last podcasts where we call it TNA because they are now also, spoiler alert, called Impact Wrestling.
Yes.
As of this Thursday's broadcast, and the network is is it? I'm pretty sure it was this Thursday that the network is revealed to be Mick Foley, and Mick Foley basically tells Hulk Hogan, yeah, you were in charge of TNA, but it's not TNA anymore. It's now Impact Wrestling. So the name change is going into effect. So, you know, they're doing a lot of different things, you know, and bringing China in, you know, whatever. I mean, I don't know. I always kind of expected to see China back at some point, somewhere. I expected it to be WWE at one point, honestly. But, you know, it's something I didn't think I'd see because I've seen a lot of interviews with China, and she has always been pretty straight up on the record to say, I don't really care about wrestling anymore. I'm not – I probably, you know, won't ever do it ever again. She started making some comments, I know, around WrestleMania time where she was saying that she wanted to – get in the ring and have a match with Snooki and like all this stuff because she was saying it was disrespectful to put Snooki on the card. And she started making some comments at that point. So I don't know, like, so looking like she was issuing some challenges. Then, yeah, then this news came out, which was also a change of pace too, because the original plan for Kurt Angle's mistress was to be Isis, the Amazon, the chick that was supposed to be on NXT, the girl, the Diva season, that's like 7 foot tall. That they ended up cutting right before the season started. WWE let her go, and it was supposed to be her. She was supposed to come out and be part of this angle. So I don't know what happened with that, but yeah, they ended up getting China kind of completely out of nowhere. So I mean, it is what it is. I mean, China, you know, I never, you know, minded China, honestly. I mean, you know, she was, you know, we have Beth Phoenix now, but before that, we had China. You know, I mean, it just is what it is. I mean, she'll probably not be half of what she was, you know, obviously 10 years ago. But, you know, I mean, for nostalgia's sake, you know, I don't really care. I don't really mind to see her again. I watched TNA literally in about 10 minutes on my DVR. So, you know, with all the fast forwarding. So it is what it is. And, you know, I'll check it out and you know, go from there.
Yeah. Plus, Jeff Jarrett can get his win back against China, so that's always good.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, that'll be nice. Yeah, I don't know. I guess they're gonna do a match. Which that's completely, you know, having her there once is kind of like a funny thing. Is one thing. Yeah, I don't know. Putting her in a match. We'll see. It's you know, something. It exists. So it is apparently a real thing. So yeah, but the fact that you just compared China to Beth Phoenix makes me sad, because Beth Phoenix is actually like really is good, and China was pretty terrible. If you go back and watch the matches, I mean, you know, the character, you know, for a while was fine. I mean, you know, being the silent, you know, monster behind Triple H was cool, and you know, and she developed kind of a personality for a little bit, and that it was kind of fun, and then it just kind of got wacky and silly and weird and dumb. But that happens occasionally in professional wrestling. Things occasionally will get dumb. So
yeah, I mean, I agree. I think Beth Phoenix is better also by a long shot, but I was comparing it just as she's today's, you know, China, just because of her strength, and
okay,
she could actually go head to head with you know, the males, and okay, we haven't had that since her, you know, so
that's true.
That's just what I mean by that.
I will concede your point. Absolutely. So, all right. Well, let everybody know where they can find Future Endeavors and all about what you're doing.
Of course. You know, Future Endeavors, wrestling podcast. We go live every single week, every Sunday, 11 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. You can head over to our webpage, future-endeavors.com. Listen to all our shows, archives, check out the news. We are currently running a contest to win a trip to D.C. for the newly announced Capital Punishment pay-per-view. The contest has been running for several weeks now. The deadline is this Sunday, May 8th. So get in your submission to us, and you could win an all-expense-paid trip to Washington, D.C., airfare, hotel, the whole nine, and we are all going to that pay-per-view, all three of us, so you will chill with the whole Future Endeavors crew. Of course, if you're on Facebook, give us a like, facebook.com/futureendeavors, and you know, follow on Twitter, twitter.com/futureendeavors, and myself, DX Don Mega.
All right. Well, thanks again, Don, for talking with us about the show, and appreciate it as always. And thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk to you again.